Blog Talk Radio.
As the story goes, an old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells his grandson, "There's a fight going on inside me, and this is a terrible fight. You see, this fight is between two wolves. One wolf is evil. It is envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity. It's full of regret, greed, arrogance, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other wolf is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, full of humility, kindness, benevolence and empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. This same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too." The grandson, he thought about it. He looked up and asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the wolf you feed."
Yeah. Lord, it's so hard living this life, a constant struggle. But I won't accept that this is how it's gonna be. Therefore, you got to let me and my people go. 'Cause I wanna be free, completely free. Lord, won't you please come and save me? I wanna be free, totally free. I'm not gonna.
Wake up, goddammit!
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. Bienvenidos, que tal, namaste, oki, and welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show, broadcasting you live every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, blogtalkradio.com. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties. Holding down the other half of our hosting duties. Some call him the Lions Historian. Others call him Unc. I simply just call him my best friend. He's my dad, Bill Green. Good evening, Dad. Yo, what's happening, man? Que pasa?
Que tell, whatever that is.
Right on, right on. Bueno,
Pablo. What is that? Yeah. Benito Pablo and all the rest of them. Yeah, outstanding. Man, you must have that written down because you just spit that out too smoothly, you know.
Oh,
outstanding.
Thank you.
I wish you knew firsthand, and there's no way you can know firsthand. You probably will have a similar experience with your son. But, man, I can't even begin to tell you what it feels like, what it does in my heart, how it lifts my soul, you know, when you describe me as your best friend. You know, and I'll tell you why, you know, right quick. I won't belabor the point. You know, I came up at a time where fatherhood, you came up at a time, rather, where fatherhood, I guess parenthood in general, well, fatherhood in particular, was not intended to be a popularity contest. So the idea being learning parental skills meant the last thing you wanted to be to your children was a friend, you know, and didn't want your children to see you as a friend, but instead as a disciplinarian to be respected. But children don't stay children forever. They eventually grow into young men and young women. And I don't know if parental skills ever allowed the model to evolve as the children evolve, especially to a place of young adulthood. And as I think about it and have thought about it and reflected on it, even as far as our relationship is concerned, of course, relationships evolve, they change, they grow, they mature. You know, and I don't know if you know, folks really consider that the relationship with children should mature as well, which means there is a space for friendship. You know, there's a camaraderie even. You know, I don't know about the hanging out at bars and competing for a squeeze. You know, but you know, within social and moral standards, you know, just the fiber of the relationship itself should have an aspect of growth that allows, you know, friendship as adults to take place. So, you know, I really appreciate, man. I really love the fact that you refer to me, you know, as your best friend. That's quite a compliment.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
On so many levels.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so anyway, I had no, go ahead. I had
no
intention of saying all this, you know. And I don't know, you've been referring to me as your best friend for the time we've been doing these shows, you know. And it just, I don't know, it just inspired me to say this. So that's it. Amen.
Yeah. Amen.
Now, can you loan me $50?
Hey, you know I got you, man. Can I sell you or what? You know? You got Cash App.
Yeah,
I can set it up
for
you.
He's saying that because we're on the show right now. Believe me, when the show comes to an end, I'll backtrack and say, Wilfredo, my man, best friend, Benito Pablo. There it is, you say. And you'll be like, huh? That might have been what I said for show, Dad, but you know.
I mean, you know, it might be like, it'd be like, no, nah, man, well, you know, I got to take care of something.
Yeah, I got this thing.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man, you know I got you. Yeah, you know, I've had people, you know, ask, what's the term? But not directly, you know, inadvertently, I guess, or some ways, about that statement, you know, about, you know, saying that, you know, you're my best friend. But this just goes to define our relationship, because even with you and my mom. You know, you and my mom, me and you, me and my mom, just our immediate inner circle and the way that we've always maintained our relationship, you know, the three of us. Even though I didn't grow up with the both of you, I did grow up with the both of you. You know, even though you had your moments of madness, as you called it, on previous shows. Okay, this is the first time somebody's listening to our show, you know. But here we are. Here we are, you know, and here we are,
right?
You know, doing what we do, you know, to make, you know, because we can go a whole hour about this. I'm just cutting it short real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but here we are. And ladies and gentlemen, again, here we are. Every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffects. That's the letter FX. As a matter of fact, let me keep going with it. So, ladies and gentlemen, as we do our shows in the beginning, we like to just leave a couple of reminders before we really get into our show. The first thing, of course, is grab a Pilsen. Excuse me, a pencil and pad, a paper post-it note, a marker, whatever you got, the back of an envelope or a napkin even. We just want to make sure you got something to write with in case you have any questions, any comments. You know what? You may even pick up something from our banter. Who knows? You know, but we want to make sure you don't miss it, you don't forget it, write it down. The other thing is that you can actually engage with us as well. On our shows every Monday and Wednesday, you can call in directly. Our number here, hopefully you've got that pen and paper handy. The number here is 516-453-6094. Again, for you, 516-453-6094. What you do is press 1 on your keypad. That'll put your number in our queue, and we will bring you in as soon as we can. And let us know what's on your mind. The other way you can engage with us, we have our chat room on Blog Talk Radio. You heard it already, blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseFX, the Greenhouse FX, the letter FX, with your free Blog Talk Radio profile. Just go ahead and log into the show. You'll see at the bottom of the page, our chat room is open. Our man Adam is holding it down already as he says, good evening. So, you know, hit us up that way. And, of course, ye old Facebook is open for you on our event page. You may have received an invitation. So there's a discussion tab. Just click that discussion tab, and you can type in any questions, comments, or shout-outs you'd like to give us. And, of course, we're always looking for positive comments. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Keep in mind, this is not a competition. You know, this is just me and my dad, you know, as we say, having an opportunity to bridge the gaps of our generations and provide a perspective from a black male perspective, a black American male perspective. So there you have it, from your friends at the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show.
Yeah, right on.
So, man, you know, it's always something, right? It's always something. I know that we wanted to finish up some other discussions that you've been talking about, and we've been talking about for the last couple of shows. But if you don't mind, just real quick, I just wanted to just give a couple of
Go ahead.
Little something real quick. You know, the last couple of shows I've talked about like gas and stuff, you know, little moments to help us, you know, adapt to these changing times and adapt to where we are today. So, you know, just recently, as yesterday, with our summer solstice, where, in case some of you don't know what the summer solstice is, it's this moment where the earth is at its furthest tilt towards the sun. I think that between you, Dad, and me, I think we got about 15 to 16 hours of sunlight. And I think even today, we're still getting it right now as we talk, as we speak.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's hot.
Yeah.
Hey, I know it's hot, man.
Yeah.
But
it's hot.
All right. You know, but it kind of feels good. That's all right.
Yeah,
that's
man.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm thankful.
Daylight, man.
Yes, sir. Mm. Give me that. Give me that vitamin D. Give me that sunlight. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I post pictures. You see my pictures on Facebook with the sun. I might be out hustling or whatever early 4 or 5 in the morning. And that's
sunrise.
Just kind of my
pictures.
Yeah,
sunrise. Right.
Yeah, man. That's just my, you know, my thank you, my digital thank yous to you know, the blessing of to see the dawning of a new day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So even with the summer solstice, you know, just wanted to say thank you, and here we are again. But, you know, with that, I just wanted to – I know we're in the summertime now, and a lot of people are traveling. You know, you're traveling. I'll be traveling soon. You know, a lot of us are making plans to make some moves. So I just wanted to just leave a couple of pieces of advice, if you will, before we really get into the depth of our show. Do you mind that? If I just...
Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I know a lot of people like to fly. You know, they like to go ahead and get on the airplane. Dad, I know you are not one of them. You know.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, we're going to get on the road. And I'm going to tell you, I'm a child of my father. And I'm cool with that as well. But I'm going to give you a piece of advice.
You worked for an airline.
I had the best of both worlds.
For
man,
an airline. You know, yeah, come on. You charted out weather patterns for pilots, man.
Yeah, right on, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm chartering flights overseas from Atlanta to Amsterdam.
Right.
So, you know, keep in mind, like I just noticed the other day, Dad, that in Dallas, there were about 1,000 pilots who stood outside in protest to Southwest because they're being overworked. And there's a lot of airline employees who are being overworked. As you said, that I've worked in the business. But at the time I worked in the business, it's not as bad as it is now. Don't get me wrong. I work. You know, I work. But now, and you all travel. Don't act like, except for my father, don't act like y'all don't know what I'm talking about. Y'all seen the videos. Y'all been on these airplanes. Be smart about how you travel during this summer time. You know, I know it's hot out here and gas is high, but, you know, I think a peace of mind is very important if you want to, you know, measure the difference between driving and flying. But maybe you're a novice. Maybe you're not used to driving on the road. So if you're a novice driver, I would say if it's less than 7 hours, consider driving. If you're a novice driver for traveling long distance, you know, my dad and I, we ain't got no problem driving 13, 15 hours. We're going to knock it out. But you know, I'm just trying to give a reference, if you will, a timeline as far as trying to decide or figure out what you're going to do. You know, so that's just something to consider. Again, if you're not used to driving on the roads, if it's less than 7 hours to fly, consider driving. You know, it's the convenience of flying, right? I get it, you know, but you may be able to adapt to not having to travel. That's the easiest way I can put it. But if you do have to fly, then try to plan your flights early in the day. Give yourself the day in case something happens, because stuff happens. And I'm being nice saying stuff. Stuff happens. So try to find the earliest flight as possible if you have to fly. And if you have a layover, if you have to connect to another city, try not to connect it so close together. Give yourself like a 3-hour difference of the layover. You know, if you're traveling, and the layover is if you're traveling two aircrafts, you're flying from one city to what's called a connecting city. You stop at this city, and then from there you go to your final destination. But you want to make sure you give yourself enough time in case something happens from your original flight. You know, just be mindful and don't really put yourself in a bind, if you will, that you get stuck, you know, because of problems with the airlines. People have been overworked, pilots, flight attendants, et cetera, even the people at the desk. So, you know, be mindful of the travel times and the way that you schedule your flights if you have to take them. So that's it. I'm going to cut it short, you know. But again, if you don't have to fly, if you can travel 7 hours driving, 8 hours, do it. Do it. Your peace of mind is more important. So that's all. That's all I wanted to say, because I know everybody's making some moves. 4th of July is coming up. So, you know, pick your battles wisely. Thank you, Dad. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, this whole thing of flying, you know, I mean, like, it's a complication all the way around. Driving is expensive right now.
Yeah.
You know, flying is, you know, is overwhelming right now. It's one thing after another. Shortage of pilots. American Airlines is cutting service to certain cities. So, you know, my fear of flying is only surpassed by my love of driving. So I have flown. You know, there was a time I used to love to. But regardless of all that, I mean, flying, driving may not be necessarily less expensive than flying, depending
That's
on
true.
The circumstances. But
That's true.
The key is time. in travel. I mean, that's something right there. That's worth everything that is being said. Knowing limitations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everybody, you know, I don't care, seasoned drivers, newcomers, people who just got their licenses, people who've been driving forever. You know, the thing is, driving is hypnotic, or it can be. And a person who is on the road, or like you said, beautiful too, over, you know, 6 hours, needs to really be aware of the fact that the body starts shifting into a, almost into a, like a meditation mode.
You feel like you're sinking.
As a matter of fact, a lot of people don't realize the roads are built the way they're built purposely, with turns, with shifts, with dips, you know, not just straight lines, so that people will stay active. Because if it's just a straight shot, like you remember when you were in Nevada going through the desert, you know, imagine that being, you know, from California to Chicago, just a straight shot. You know, man, I mean, it will be very hypnotic to drive for an extended period of time. And even the most seasoned drivers don't know when that time may hit. Now, two people, that's a little bit different when you're driving together. But not necessarily if the other person falls asleep.
Right. I was,
so
I was just about to say that, right.
Yeah. It's good to know limitations. Like,
right.
And, like, as I've gotten older, from the waist up, yeah, I can still pretty much kick it. I can go just as long as I've gone. But from the waist down, it's a different experience. My knees and my thighs and even, you know, right around the waist even, you know, can't take that sit down. You know, I mean, but yeah, you say my knees, yeah. You know, knees locked in that position for an extended period of time. Oh, yeah, they stiffen up, you know. And anyway, that's good, a good piece of advice, man. You know, just in traveling. And,
yeah.
And it's, you know, holidays, sure, but this is travel time, period. You know, the warmer months, people always travel more. Right on. Good advice.
Yeah. So, yeah, just pick your battles wisely, you know. And also, last thing is just if you can, get travel insurance as well, just in case. You know, just be smart with it. Okay. That was it.
Okay. Yeah. So, where are we tonight? Crazy show. Crazy show. I tell you, a lot of things, even just since Monday. And I was just kind of flipping through, you know, my various scripts over the course of just the last couple of weeks. And
right.
it always just impresses me. I'm going to use that word. It impresses me the ground we cover. You know, we'd be slinging out some serious topics of discussion. And it doesn't matter, you know. If only we know if we stick to the script or not. Only we know, you and I, know what we intend to do. So folks don't know when we don't do what we intend to do. Like for over a week now, you know, I've been wanting to talk about post-traumatic stress. And we started talking about mental illness a couple weeks ago. And but the ebb and flow of a show like ours, you know, requires awareness of several things, you know, right? I mean, like the news of the day, what dialogue may stir, you know, like Monday, we wound up, well, we thought we would just spend maybe 10, 15 minutes talking about Juneteenth. It evolved into a whole show, you know, which this isn't a complaint. This is, to me, the beauty of talk radio. You know, to me, that's, you know, what we have as a kind of a freedom to do what we do. And we're not really stuck to a timeline that says we have 10 minutes for an interview or 5 minutes to mention a particular headline. We really get to talk about the feelings that any given discussion may stir up. So it's been interesting just to look at the past couple of weeks and the topics covered, and still the things talked about where the topics weren't covered, just outlined. So, right on to, I'm giving this show its props, man. I think it's a special thing that we do what we do and the way we do it. So, just since Monday, the hearings, right, have, I don't know if you've been watching them, and I don't know if black folks in general aren't really interested in watching them. You know, we talked a while back about, you know, the way the hearing started out, it was like watching the director's cut of a movie. Really wasn't new information initially, just information we already knew about that had additional videos or additional people interviewed or whatever. But as these old boys been going, as this hearing thing has been happening, it's like, man, I realize, of course, I'm not naive, and I realize that for most folks, the hearings are boring. For most folks, it's like, yes, so what? For most folks, it's like, January 6th already happened, let's move on. Yeah, and for most folks, it's, so what are you going to do about it? You know, or what can be done about it? Well, that's the hope for some, that nothing will be done about it. And the hope for some is that so much time has passed that people have lost interest. And the hope for some is that even with renewed interest, that in a short period of time, it will in itself become boring, if not even annoying. But I tell you, there are certain times, like the other day when this young sister got on and she got to talking about what she went through, you know, with the bully tactics of the Trump regime.
Right.
And how she got severely treated, you know, just for being an officer of the polls, you know, just doing her job, you know, just doing a job that she and her mother, they have like a legacy of family involvement, grandma, mom, and now her. And Trump just singled them out, you know, just singled them out in Georgia, just made them the pawns and the recipients of his bully tactics. And, of course, all his henchmen and women, you know, just followed the debate, and they just, I mean, they did things as extreme as busting into her grandmother's house, telling her grandmother that they were in search for the daughter and the daughter's mother to make a citizen's arrest. I mean, the behavior and the tactics are only short, so short of lynch mob tactics, you know, and this is the thing. There are Americans who are cool with that behavior. There are Americans who are thinking that this big lie about Trump losing, you know, that he really didn't lose this election and losing it unfairly, that facts don't mean anything. Facts from the judicial system, facts from Republicans, you know, who stand everything to gain, you know, from the idea of Trump staying in power, who are saying, no, nothing, you know, there's no fakery at all. Facts that just belie the fact that everything was legal. Still, people don't care. It's like so many of these folks, man, haven't recovered from the hangover of Obama being in office for 8 years. You know, it's like, we're never going to let that happen, even if it means we have to tear this government down. There is never going to be another time when we're going to have any type of civility, intelligence, or world recognition in a possible light ever again. We can't never let that happen. So if we can have a Trump, that's fine, because that's as far away from an Obama regime as you can get. You know, which leads me right to this one thing I just wanted to tap on just a little bit. Again, on my way to the show, instead of just minding my own business, right?
Right, you know, okay.
I mean, literally, on my way to the show, you know, just typing in, you know, blogtalkradio.com. Just minding my own business, just, you know, just ambling down the road with hands in pockets, just whistling, you know. I stumbled across this thing done by C-SPAN. And according to C-SPAN, the ratings used they graded every president, you know, from Washington to Biden. And Biden, of course, is not included because his time ain't up yet. And interesting enough, Trump was not rated as the worst president. But what is interesting is looking at the ones that at the bottom of the list, or depending on your angle, at the top of the list of the worst, there's four. James Buchanan, Andrew Johnson, Franklin Pierce, and Trump. And Pierce and Trump are tied, you know, for the third worst. You know, Buchanan is considered by this rating the worst. And I'm sure we all know about James Buchanan, right? Oh, yeah, we know that. Yeah. He's the 15th president of the United States Democrat. Oh, yeah. You know, we all know about Andrew Johnson, the 17th president of the United States, you know. And he ran on the National Union ticket, which is interesting. Who knew that, right? Not Democrat or Republican, but the National Union ticket. And Franklin Pierce was also a Democrat. He was the 14th president. So you got the 14th, 15th, and 17th president. Now, who do you think was the 16th president right in between these guys? You know, it's amazing, isn't it? Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
So you go from Buchanan to Johnson. Well, you go from Pierce to Buchanan to Johnson with Lincoln's, you know, wedged in between. And then you go from, you know, there to Trump. So you span this big gap of time between them, only to wind up literally, right back at the same spot. You know, Franklin Pierce, his, and we talked about this, by the way, on a previous
right.
show, the
yep.
Kansas-Nebraska Act, you
yep.
know, which made them territories that, among other issues, allowed a reversing of prohibition of slavery in Kansas, which had been previously a free state. So this Kansas-Nebraska Act, turning these two states into territories because of the railroads going through, which, of course, was promoted by this manifest destiny, you know, idea, you know. And just speculating, not having any facts in front of me, just speculating. Whatever had to happen between Kansas and Nebraska seems to make sense that this act, which was kind of a, it was really more of a, what do you call it when two people get together and they can't really settle an issue, so they just kind of make a deal. I can't remember for some reason what that's called. Isn't it funny how my brain just does that sometimes, you know? Where's Adam when we need him?
A parlay?
You know, well, it all comes from parlay, but
yeah.
There's a word used that, anyway, you know.
Adam's
so
jumping back into the chat room right now. He had to, he left
so
out for a minute. He's coming
back. It was, okay. It was a disagreement that led to a compromise. That's the word I'm looking for. You know, so really the Kansas-Nebraska Act was a compromise that allowed Kansas to become a slave state once again, to allow this free passage of the Continental Railway, you know. So, and of course, Pierce met fierce resistance from his Republican counterparts. Buchanan, you know, considered to be the worst, you know, he's really the guy who was behind the impetus that led to the Civil War. Again, following in the footsteps of Pierce, this whole manifest destiny concept was really giving free rein to this white supremacist attitude of we can just take what the hell we want to take. And then, of course, there was Lincoln, who was sandwiched in between these guys, who took on the issues firsthand. And we know where that went, but it led to his assassination, only to be followed by Andrew Johnson, who took office after President Lincoln was assassinated. And while Johnson had reestablished many southern states, you know, to some degree of continuity, once again, financially, And slavery was on its way out, but that wasn't because of his regime. That was the carryover from Lincoln. Still, new Southern governments led by ex-Confederates quickly passed codes, which we call Jim Crow laws, that controlled newly freed black citizens. You know, and so the freedom of movement that the Emancipation Proclamation was supposed to allow, was stalled, by these newly developing Jim Crow acts, or laws rather, or behaviors even, and he vetoed the Freedmen's Bureau and civil rights bills, and he fought to convince the South not to ratify, the 14th Amendment. So that was Andrew Johnson's, and of course he also was he was impeached, but like Trump, he came through it okay. And to me it's just amazing that I would look at these four guys, Pierce, Buchanan, Johnson, and Trump, and see, the continuity between the four. So what I think we as a people, we as a nation, we as a whatever you want to call it, need to really come to grips with is how important it is to understand how history has played such an active part in the development of our behaviors one to the other. But we are not a country that really invests in history. We're a country that responds to immediacy. We want what we want when we want it, like a child. And this is a very young country by, definition of the Declaration of Independence. I'm very young in the idea of not even understanding world government. A country very young in dealing with aspects of cultural differences and diversities. A country that would be typically like this babe in the woods would be, one that's paranoid about, losing its power, which this country is terrified. Well, those who run it are terrified of losing their power right from the beginning, right from its inception. So this little piece of history, looking at who's the worst and looking at the four worst and seeing Trump tied right into this rating system, it's like the past is coming back to greet us once again. And it's something that, unfortunately, even the hearings, to me, aren't doing an adequate enough job of connecting historical dots. Just to put it out there for people to understand, this is something that has been a continuum. This wasn't something generated by Trump. Don't be confused by this attempted coup. Yeah, that's just something that's reflective of just how this country allowed an idiot to have so much power, based on the laws that were designed to keep it from happening. This country never thought, somebody could be elected into a position that could manipulate the system in the way he did. I don't know why. I guess because this country has always been a country who's been able to control its own destiny until Obama came along. And suddenly there was this element that this country never had to deal with. So I think, and this element, of course, is an element of fairness. I think it might have even, hurt Obama's popularity a little bit that he tried, in my opinion. Of course, who other's opinion would I be offering? He tried a little bit too hard to accommodate the majority of the people in this country. He tried a little bit too hard to be a policy of diversity, to the extent that I think, in many ways he alienated much of his base. And unfortunately, I think Biden is kind of slipping into that in a much shorter period of time. At least Obama had a honeymoon for 4 years, and it was a common enemy as Congress lined itself up against him. And, that Mitch McConnell, just we're going to do everything we can to be sure he's a one-term president. So that pretty much, that laid out the battle lines, and people took offense to that. And I think that really, helped Obama. But moving into those next 4 years, it became the fight that Biden's dealing with right now. where you have a Congress of lawmakers, and we still haven't investigated how many of those lawmakers really have any kind of degree in law. You know, probably we're going to find out that not too many. And yet they're still dictating laws by popularity. So I think, you know, that a little bit like this, just taking a look at these four presidents and taking a look at where the hearings could have gone would really help people to understand if the only thing is we just have the advantage of cable news. We just have the advantage of being able to get everything real quick, upfront, and personal. We have the advantage of cell phones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No point in listing all the modern technologies we have right at our fingertips. So we get information rapidly. That's the only difference. You know, back in the day, folks had to use things like telegrams and conversations and newspapers. You know, so things came slowly but still effectively. But this country is a country of immediacy. We want it now. And unfortunately, now means having to sacrifice so much history. So anyway, just wanted to kind of tap on that a little bit. Now, one may wonder, and I would fully understand one wondering that, what in the hell does all this have to do with post-traumatic stress? It has everything to do with post-traumatic stress. You know, if a person understands that even though it's something identified in 1980, still its symptoms weren't restricted to 1980. The symptoms have to do with the information that goes into research and diagnosis. So we look back from 1980 back into the 1700s, just in the inception of this country. You know, not even including the races of those who were native to this country at the time, just those who, you know, were brought to this country and not voluntarily, you know, talking about slaves and even indentured servants, but more slaves, because many indentured servants came by a willfulness, a willingness, as we covered in talking about pilgrims and who also came on the ships with them. Many indentured servants came knowing that they would be, after a period of time, given whatever they needed to go forth and multiply. Of course, slaves, you know, earned the slave labor, which meant nothing, and treated like cattle or chattel, which meant no rights. You know, a slave could, like a cow, drop dead in the pasture and nobody even, you know, knew that cow's name, or, you know, and just keep right on moving with other cows. So, you know, understanding, you know, the severity of what post-traumatic stress suggests, then we could better understand how slavery would have such a negative, driving, continuous impact on those descendants of slaves. You know, I don't know if calling ourselves African Americans relieve us of that experience. I don't know if changing who we call ourselves, you know, decreases or eliminates or cures the impact of slavery. I don't think, you know, it does anything to help cure it. I think until we come up with an understanding through research done, you know, I'd like to see it done by black people for black people. But anybody, if they're going to do it based on the research that comes from slavery, not from any other source, you know, creating a whole different category in the Diagnostic Statistic Manual, which is written by psychiatry for psychiatry, I think then we'll begin to really see the far-reaching impact of post-traumatic stress. So what then is post-traumatic stress? You know, well, its symptoms and its causes and its risk factors are well worth paying attention to. Its complications, its preventions, and its treatments, you know, it can be somewhat convoluted. And who's going to orchestrate it can even be more compromised. I'll give you an example. Let's start at the last first. Psychotherapy. Okay, what is psychotherapy and what is counseling? Are psychotherapy and counseling the same? No, they're not, although they would kind of be defined as being very similar. You know, the big difference between, as you may have already figured out, Will, the big difference between psychotherapy and counseling is initials. Now, I'm talking not as somebody who's degreed. Matter of fact, I'm talking as somebody who has a very limited formal education. I'm not going to get into that story right now, man, so you can breathe easy. So I'm probably the lousiest reference to be making this kind of elaboration when it comes to psychotherapy and counseling. The only thing I have to be my claim to fame is I'm an ex-drunk, you know, who went through treatment and who came out a counselor and who's worked as a counselor for 40-plus years. You know, but still, I was in my approach, I'm saying was because I'm retired, I was, you know, very eclectic, meaning I borrowed a little bit from here and a little bit from there and tried to put them all in the mix so that something healthy would come out of it. You know, psychotherapy tends to follow a very strict line of treatment, and counseling tends to be very much defined by what it is that brings a person to a place of needing help. Like, eclectic in the way I used it was in regards to people who were dealing with substance abuse issues. So I may borrow from humanistic approaches. I may borrow from behavioral mod, borrow from rational emotive therapy. I may borrow from reality therapy, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, trying to fit into the package of that client who was sitting across the desk from me, who by the nature of his or her skin was not reflective of these models of care. Clients of color are not the clients diagnosed in the methods I just described. So I had to borrow a little bit from this, a little bit from that, to help fit, you know, the dynamics that were being offered from these clients who, by the way, were suffering from undiagnosed post-traumatic stress. See, I mean, it's crazy. Well, it's crazy. Talking about mental illness, and I have the nerve to say, it's crazy. Well, it is crazy. Crazy is the crazy thing. So yeah. Psychotherapy is a general term for treating mental health problems by talking with a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or other mental health providers. During ongoing sessions, one learns about moods, feelings, thoughts, and behaviors related to oneself. The idea is to learn healthy coping skills. That's psychotherapy. Counseling, the provision of assistance and guidance in resolving personal, social, or psychological problems and difficulties, especially by a professional who is someone who's paid for services rendered, by the way. In case you wondered, what separates a novice from a professional? Gets paid, you know. It's a process where people meet with a professional to explore problems related to the issues that promoted one's need to seek help, guidance, and assistance, and hopefully identify solutions. Now, here's a little bit of a wrinkle. You know, psychiatry isn't necessarily designed to help identify solutions. It tends to be an ongoing, laborious process that gets into years, you know, of care that pretty much tracks a person's ability to adapt and adjust to the circumstances that brought them to the psychiatrist's couch in the first place.
Right.
Counseling, in my opinion, counseling is more of I don't want to say short term, but it's more of a impact kind of approach that deals with, you know, like, let's use an example, marriage counseling. People may be doing fine in marriage for years, but then underlying issues may be surfaced to create a financial dilemma that one member doesn't agree with the other member on solution. So in other words, they get into arguments about financial difficulty. And because they never considered financial difficulties when they got married, something never talked about, they don't really have a language of understanding or compromise now that financial issues have surfaced. So what do they need? They need a tiebreaker. And that counseling may serve, you know, marriage counseling may very well serve that purpose by two people being able to go in and share their dilemma with a, I don't want to say disinterested party, but a neutral party, a tiebreaker,
mm-hmm.
where we
yeah.
can weigh both persons' opinions of what they think is the issue. Remember, it takes two people who are right to have an argument, right?
Right,
you know,
right.
You know, right. They both think they're right. So, you know, with psychotherapy, you know, it, psychotherapy is most effectively done one-on-one. Counseling, you know, can cover even, in some situations, a group. Group counseling, you know, where you have a group of people sitting in a circle with one person as facilitator, you know, covering a given topic of interest. You know, and the idea, of course, in group counseling is that everybody has an opinion about a given issue, and that can really help, you know, everyone increase the number of options available to pursue, you know, a particular problem. To me, that's the advantage of having a group of a circle of support. You know, the idea in having a circle of support is not to have people who agree with you, you know, but instead a circle that you can trust. And the trust element is very important because you trust the element so much that they're going to give you feedback based on the behavior that you're exuding that they're observing. So if you trust that group, you're going to trust the feedback they're giving you about your behavior, you know. And so it's a matter of understanding something that people have a hard time accepting. We are the way people perceive us to be, whether we like it or not. The only question is, are we in agreement with how we're being perceived? And so here comes post-traumatic stress once again. You know, having to learn to adapt may not mean having to be accurate in how you show up. So how am I doing, man? It's just a whole lot in a short period of time that's putting everybody to sleep. I can dig it. You know,
bro, I'm interested. You know, I'm good.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, the millions and millions.
The what? The how many?
The millions. Millions.
My man. Yeah, how we doing out there, Adam? Let's see if he's still awake. Yeah. All right, he gave a thumbs up. Cool. All right. So, you know, and again, in a previous show, we listed several different types of mental illnesses. And having already come to understand May was Mental Health Awareness Month, that doesn't
right.
mean we don't have to be aware of mental issues for the other 11 months.
Right.
You know, post-traumatic stress was the one I wanted to focus on initially. Doesn't mean that
yeah.
in future shows we won't cover some of the others. But why post-traumatic stress? Well, you know, again, I'm basing it on the theme of slavery. And why am I doing that? Because there really isn't recognized anyway, and that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's just not recognized right now as something that we hear talked about in the airwaves of, you know, what dictates our place we go for information. Any kind of theories, any kind of approaches, any kind of treatments, any kind of research that has taken the slave dynamic in America, have used whatever recordings available, have tracked where people evolved from slavery and how that translated into their pursuit of freedom from, you know, the 1700s. The 1800s and on up to the 21st century. You know, you asked the question money, very prolific in my opinion. You know, actually you didn't ask a question. You made a statement about Juneteenth that it really doesn't give you a sense of freedom. You know, and there it is right there. The Emancipation Proclamation may have been signed in 1862, but where do we see evidence of fair and equal treatment in this country for black people since? You know, it's a very elusive thing that comes and goes. You know, even shortly after Lincoln was assassinated, the Johnson regime did everything it could to dismantle everything that had been accomplished through the Civil War.
Right.
Know?
And if that doesn't cause people to just stop and think for a second, I mean, just like, yeah. Wow, what a coincidence, right? Yeah. Wow. Okay. I'm sorry.
What a coincidence. But it's only a coincidence as long as we don't connect the dots of history, you know, which I really do appreciate what this show to me really stands for, a constant willingness to connect the dots of history. You know, I can't help it if it seems boring. You know, it's only boring because denial has so dictated it's not worth my interest. Well, denial is what, you know, has so many black folks in this everlasting condition of contempt prior to investigation.
Worth your interest, people.
There lies our greater problem.
It's worth your interest, people. I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt. Sorry.
contempt prior to investigation. We just want what we want when we want it, you know, and rightfully so. We deserve it. But it's so important that we understand the fight that is still in front of us as opposed to the fights that have come and gone. So when we begin to get a little grasp of this, and I'm just going to kind of whip through it, you know, because I did all this intro and now I'm out of time, you know, so, you know, the symptoms of post-traumatic stress, you know, reliving flashbacks, hallucinations, nightmares, anything at all related to a particular incident. Now, somebody may ask, well, how does that relate to slavery? Because none of us are, you know, we didn't live in the 18th or the 19th century, you know, 17 or 1800s. Well, it would be great if generations removed settled all of the issues that were prevalent for their time, and therefore the generations that followed didn't have to pick up the loose pieces, right? It'd be wonderful if every generation resolved its own issues and everybody moved on. Well, I think we can rest assured that the issues of slavery are still being fought on the battlegrounds of this country in court as we speak today. I'm not going to even say in my opinion. I mean, Jesus Christ, if we're not seeing that, then what's the point? So reliving flashbacks show up a little bit different. Hallucinations or nightmares, you know, they are as much real for us as when we see something on television, Tulsa riots, right? You know, to watch that and realize that happened in the 20th century? That happened just a couple decades before I was born? You know, and nobody ever talked about it? And I'm sitting up here watching this program. What was that program called? I can't even remember it now. You know, that's kind of a fantasy, but yet is using this historical moment to bring it to light. You know, I bet there's a whole bunch. What was the name of that show, that series? That had Bass Reeves and had the Tulsa riots.
So you talk about recently the Watchmen, the Watchmen thing on HBO.
Yeah, the Watchmen thing. Yeah, the Watchmen.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole lot of folks who didn't know they were going to get that piece of accurate history. This is what I'm thinking. I can only base it on the number of people who have talked about, you know, not the Watchmen, but that little thing, that whole Tulsa thing. It's like, that shit really happened?
Yeah.
And, you know, like just reliving that moment, didn't matter that we weren't there. It had an impact on the psyche, you know, of black folks and white folks, you know, one way or the other, to realize that even though I was denied the historical implications of that, knowing that it happened has a far-reaching effect on the unconscious circumstances that have defined our experiences right here in America. You know, so these nightmares, these flashbacks, these hallucinations also tie into generations of unhealed wounds. You know, think about it, man. Think about it in your lifetime. You know, think about somebody or something. You remember when that dude jacked you up in Atlanta and took your leather coat?
Right. Yeah.
Reliving that moment you know, stirs up whatever it stirs up in you that has post-traumatic stress implications. The feelings of, I would imagine that that haunted you for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would imagine that it even today, talking about it, it's like, damn, why he bring that shit up? Excuse my language,
again. It's cool, though. Yeah, I don't mind talking about that.
I mean,
yeah, but you're right, though.
You know,
I
know,
right.
Yeah. And I know there are people who go through some semblance of post-traumatic stress when, like, their relationships break up, like marriages, you know, and, like, how many times well, I don't know about how many times, but I'm sure there's been times when you dated someone and they've laid down the law about what they will not tolerate. And it's like, wait, did I just inherit something that somebody else did to you? What's up with that? You know, these are the kind, you know, these are the things that have worked its way into the very fiber of American society. Yes, American society today has inherited the wrongs done by slavery, and until those wrongs are righted, and I don't mean by reparations, although that's the beginning. I mean by healthy approach healing the wounds that post-traumatic stress from slavery has caused. So other symptoms, you know, has to do with avoiding people, places, and things, or memories that remind one of the trauma. Trauma, very important word. Excessive arousal, increased alertness, anger, fits of rage, irritability, and even hatred, difficulty sleeping or concentrating, intrusive, negative, distressing thoughts or feelings, such as guilt. Have you ever been just riding down the highway of life, minding your own business, and all of a sudden there's a flashback of something you did 20 years ago, you know, and you're dealing with it through guilt like you just did it? And even think about all the times that you tried to, you know, that you made attempts at amending the situation. You know, there's nothing that's been done. You know, like, look, I give an example. Okay, let me, a flat affect. You know, a flat affect is an expression, a look, or a behavior that suggests the person is just tuned out, that it is, I'm not being touched by anything. I've just gone flat, you know, around the whole issue. You know, and then it has this far-reaching impact on young children that may show delays in toilet training, motor skills, or language. And this is one of my biggest points. We can assume all we want to, but we need to understand quickly that not all slaves were adults. You know, there were children who grew up seeing the brutality of their parents. You know, there were children who themselves suffered brutal abuses that their parents couldn't protect them from. There were children who laid in bed watching their mothers sexually abused by the plantation owner. You know, and fathers could do nothing but stand outside the door. You know, there were children that their mothers taught them, especially the black male children, their mothers taught them to not show their feelings, to keep their damn mouths shut, to just walk a straight line. And the fathers had to act completely detached from the family for fear of it being sold, beaten, or killed. You know, this doesn't go away because somebody signed a sheet of paper. And we're only talking about 160 years. You know, I have an aunt who's 107.
Yes, sir.
You know, so. You know, but these are the unspoken themes that post-traumatic stress feed off of. You know, I grew up at a time, my mother was born in 1917. Right? You know, my mother was born in 1917. You know, that's right on the heels of Jim Crow laws. You know, her mother had to be born in the 1800s. But yet there's no conversation or dialogue that links the experiences just in three generations. What those two generations went through and its impact on me. I was born in 47. You know, man, I mean, these are the scenes that to me are so important, you know, for research to investigate. I have a book. It's called Dry Long Soap. I stole it from your mama. I know I stole it from your mama because it's a hardback. You know, the only hardback books I have on black history, I stole it from your mama. And it turns out on the front cover that it was Dry Longso, DryLongso. Dry Longso. And it's written by the sociologist Thomas Gwaltney, his brother. Thomas Gwaltney, unique in his own right, is that he's blind. He was blind. I don't know if he's still alive. But he did this research. And by the way, the book was inscribed as a birthday gift to your Uncle John. So I got no... stole it from your mama, but it was a gift for your Uncle John. You know,
he stole it from Uncle John also, man.
Stole it from Uncle John, man. That's a damn shame. And it's about this brother, this blind sociologist, who toured the South to investigate the base of language, the roots of language in Black America. And so Dry Longso is an example. The title of the book meant from what his language research uncovered was ordinary. So Dry Longso was used in the rural South, in the rural Black South. You know, the word Dry Longso meant ordinary. So I have this whole book of dialects and words defined that is a whole other language, you know, but it was the way that people communicated. And this in itself explains what the great challenge, and I'm going to stop here and I'll pick this back up when I return in a couple of weeks, you know, what research, you know, doesn't cover. You can't have somebody come to any form of treatment and not understand their language and expect to deal with the issues presented effectively. And there's no way in the world any kind of approach toward counseling or psychotherapy can understand my language that I use to present my issues if you haven't studied my feelings. I come in talking about something about how it affects me as a Black man. You cannot assume that because I'm using English, it's the same thing that a white man would say. You need to understand the feelings behind my words if you're going to accurately pursue a diagnosis and a method of care that will help me adjust to this racist environment. And I'm so glad that these shows are archived so I can go back and hear what I just said. Now I have none of this stuff written down. Dry Longso, Adam, DryLongso. And I'm sure Will would throw it up in the chat room. And it's
DRY.
And it's by this DryLongso. And he got it. And it's written by this guy, the sociologist, Thomas Gwaltney, Gwaltney. Yeah, it's amazing I remember that. Because this is a book taken from your ma's shelf before I even started my classes, man. This was a book I used when I started the program at Monte College. That's how far back that goes, you know.
Wow.
So anyway, I'm kind of proud of myself that I remember, you know, both the title and the essence of it. So, again, if we're not being researched with problems, how in the world can we be diagnosed with solutions? You know, there's nothing that's been done to heal the wounds of slavery. Instead, all this society has done is reopen them damn wounds, man. You know, so anyway, I think that's enough for now. Causes, risk factors, complications, preventions, and treatments, you know, that'll be covered the next time. Cool.
Yeah. So I have a couple of questions. The first one is, in looking at PT as post-traumatic stress, some people will probably you know jump on the internet and Google maybe PTSD,
Good.
Post-traumatic stress disorder. But you know whether
PTSD,
whatever you're
yeah.
So you know there's different I guess. Diagnosis of PTS, post-traumatic stress, you have disorders, you have syndrome, and so what...
No, you're crossing T's and dotting I's.
Okay.
You know, the key is the first three letters, post-traumatic stress, whether it's
right.
called disorders, whether it's called, you know, disease, you know, the point is post-traumatic stress. You know, now the methods of care, you know, will be found in more sophisticated definitions. But whether it's defined as a mental illness, a disease, a disorder, or a syndrome, you know, whether it's called, you know, which it used to be called, what was it, shell shock, you know, which was defined in World War One. And, you know, like what I'm talking about is however you want to use that last letter, you know, make it post-traumatic stress as it relates to slavery. I don't care about nothing else. I don't care about that fourth letter. The most important thing is understanding that post-traumatic stress as it relates to slavery is the key for diagnosing and designing a method of care. I think all black people in America suffer from post-traumatic stress disorders in one form or another.
I'll never forget driving
through the South. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, just that, and you're speaking of the black American experience, being a black, a true black American born in America.
Yeah.
So what happened in the South?
I have the audacity to suggest that black folks have a right to have a method of care that is reflective and exclusive to them. What nerve, right? What audacity. You know, what I'm saying is I want to throw away square peg, round hole. I want to make round peg, round hole. You know, I want to make this thing something that's based on the research. You know, I would like to see it done by black people for black people, but all right. As long as you're willing to be trained by a black model, you can be white or some other color. That's cool, you know, but it's for black people, and it's based on research done to identify the uniqueness of the black experience in America since slavery. That's the whole point. We keep bypassing, you know, we had a show where we talked about black inventor, you know, and mine was about, even in the book, Dysfunctional by Design, I didn't talk about black inventors of the 20th century. I talked about all the ones that came in the 19th century. That's the 1800s. That's the century of slavery. You know, how all these, where, you know, and how did this elude history? How could this not be a regular understanding of American history, that you have one of the greatest inventors ever, Granville T. Woods, who invented the telephone? You know, he invented the telephone, you know, but he's not given his recognition in American history. And he has, I mean, like, copyrighted. This is in the Library of Congress that has a copyright, you know. And how could he not be a stalwart, you know, of American history? And the bragging rights of saying, you know, that this man came from the darkest time of our country, and look what he accomplished, y'all. And if he could come through with such a time, and if he could find the resources, we're going to show you the resources that he discovered to help him come up with these inventions. That's what history should be telling us. But instead, history just said, need to talk about that Negro. People might think they can do that too. Instead, let's talk about Jackie Robinson. Anyway. Not to diminish his accomplishments, but even that, let's talk about Jackie Robinson as a baseball player. Let's not talk about him like he had a life before he became a professional. Man, I tell you, you know, we've been robbed. There's a book called Stolen Legacy, and another one I took from your mama. So this is soft ass, you know? And I know you're familiar with all these books, you know.
Yes, sir.
And it talks about a very difficult history to read about, because one of the first things that has to be accepted is that Romans and Greeks learned everything from Hebrews, which means Africans, before that continent was called Africa, which is a French name. You know, so it's like a matter of understanding something so important that Greeks were not the ones who came up with this democratic form of government that we live by. They learned it from Africans, you know. But it's like, if a person ain't willing to accept that, then ain't no point in reading a book like Stolen Legacy, because you're just going to read it like it's just hype, innuendo, and lies. Well, that's what history has been for black folks in America, you know.
Bad wolf.
Yeah, well, it's not even bad wolf in a sense, because it takes bad wolf, good wolf to make that story come true. No, this is eliminating, it's like, no, I am the wolf. There is no other wolf. You know, so it's got nothing to do with any. This is the, well, you know, until lions have historians, hunters will always be heroes.
There he is, you the know, lion's so, historian.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so driving through the South from Austin.
Oh, yeah, right.
Through U.S. Interstate, rather, 20, going through Louisiana, going through Mississippi, going through Alabama, up to Georgia. I drove through states with somebody, with a white female, but she would argue, say, I ain't white, I'm Swiss French. I told her, I said, in the South, baby, you white. You know, so, yeah, they ain't going to wait to hear your damn, you know, resume. You know?
Right.
So anyway, you know, I had never driven through Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, or Georgia with a white woman in the car. All I had dancing around in my head was the stories of civil rights, was the stories of Emmett Till, was the stories of reading about the number of lynchings that took place as recorded in any given black magazine, you know, in the 40s. You know, I had these stories dancing around in my head, and this is post-traumatic stress in the best way I can describe it as it relates to a black man. I did not have those experiences. I did not walk the line of civil rights. However, there's one thing I came to understand. Everybody black during the movements of the 60s were on the front lines. It just, only thing that was important is recognizing the line you was walking. But there was nobody who was black in America in the 60s who was not affected. But didn't matter what we believed, didn't matter what we tried to rise above or hide behind or not attach identity to, America could have cared less. You know, we were on the front lines just by the nature of our skin color, you know, during the stretch of the 60s. So I'm driving through, you know, these states to my designation in Georgia, which is, you know, on top of it, the Atlanta, Georgia, the Cincinnati. The foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, and Dahlonega at the time, you know, its police force license plates on their cars were a Confederate flag. You know, so all of this, that experience, and as a result of having a white female in the car, and it was every ghost of the past imaginable that I feared ever being pulled over and having to deal with. You know, that's a traumatic stress for your ass, bro. You know, and trying to have the conversation with somebody who could not relate to my fear, you know, didn't help it any. It led to the point of me just keeping my mouth shut rather than go into this fit of rage for not being heard. Most black men who are angry because we still don't feel like we're heard. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, man. I'm getting out the way. Hope I answered your question.
You did. You answered my question. I appreciate it so much. It looks like you even answered Adam's question before he got a chance to ask it. What happened?
I can only talk from my own experience. I never married anybody white. We sure have a lot of mixed marriages in our lineage.
Yeah.
I was engaged to somebody white. I, you know, like I have friends, you know, like I was best man, you know, to a friend of mine at the time, you know, who married a white woman, you know, you have a cousin Pete, you know, I don't have firsthand an account of what it's like to live the experience. And I don't even know if there's a dialogue that would reflect it in a way that would suggest that it's different or would reflect that it's the same. I don't know because I never had the experience. All I know is the experiences I've had, you know, both with white people and black people. You know, walking into the room with somebody white on my arm, it's had a very interesting effect on me. The first thing I learned is I need to know the territory because, you know, like I can walk into my family with someone white on my arm, like when we came to see Jackson,
hey.
You know, at home when he got home. And, you know, we were in the heart of the hood. It's like, hey, you know, it's good. But if I walk into the same room as I did with her family, it's like, what is this? I remember one time we were decorating I was helping her decorate a hall for a wedding reception. Mm-hmm. And we sat down to eat at a table with a lot of the people, all the people she knew. And it was, and most of the people we were sitting at were young, and they were young white dudes. And this one young white cat sitting next to me looked at me and asked me, "Are you black?" And then asked me, "What are you doing here? You know, how do you deal with that?" But I did not know my element. I did not take it in consideration. I did not ask her, you know, to tell me, you know, what is the makeup of the population we're going to be dealing with. You know, she kind of left me on my own for that, you know, and, you know, although she got upset with him asking me those questions, she never really pursued with me, where did it leave me, you know, especially in regards to her and the people who surround her. These are the kind of conversations I like to have with brothers and sisters who are married to white men and or men, you know, of another persuasion. And brothers who are married to white women or women of another persuasion, just to get that's the kind of research that, you know, would fill the volumes of the black history in white America, you know. Anyway, that's the kind of stuff that these hearings aren't touching. You know, that's the kind of stuff that these hearings aren't even considering. But that's the kind of stuff that these coups are made of, you know. Yeah. So anyway, Will, that's where I am, man. Sorry, I still went 20 minutes over.
No, that's okay. You hit me with some, if I may, just real quick. I know we got to get out of here, but I was just thinking about a conversation that Sue and I had, and Sue is Mexican.
There you go,
but
yeah. And if a person, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead. If you look at Sue, what? You don't know she's Mexican,
you know, like
right?
So
one night, man, we're on a delivery route, and we deep in Indiana, man. You know, and I mean deep in Indiana.
The home of the Klan. A lot of people don't know that.
The home of the Klan. The home of Mike Pence, Dracula, as you call him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so come on, man. You know, Trump flags and everything flying high. And we deep in Indiana, man. We pull up on somebody's house. Let me turn this fan off. I hope it's not making a noise. We pull up on somebody's house. Okay. We pull up on somebody's house, man. I jump out, and we're doing an Amazon contract tonight. So I got my Amazon vest on for identity's sake, you know, because I already realized, you know, you taught me at a young age, man, be aware of your surroundings. Ladies and gentlemen, again,
amen.
I hope you got that pen and paper handy. Be aware of your surroundings, as always, no matter what you're doing. And we pulling up on somebody's house, man, it's dark. And she pull up in their driveway, and I'm like, okay. You know, just gotta, and I mean pulling up in somebody's driveway, not like slow, man. She go hard. Because, you know, we trying to get out of there. But the guy just comes out of nowhere, you know, and you know, long story short, he didn't even see the Amazon vest. You know, all he saw was everything from the neck up. Even though I had a package, a big old box in my hand, and this blue vest that glows in the dark with lights on it. All he saw was the neck up. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, me and my dad, we don't, you know, we're not like dark complected. You know, we're very fair, you know. Some people, as Dad just said, he kind of paused to try to figure out who we are. My man had no problem with figuring out I was black because I had some kind of color, period, you know. But, you know, it's and later on, it's just having to explain and to have that kind of dialogue, you know, like, you know, it's just a different route. This is a different scenario. This is a different situation you put me in just because of how I look compared to how you look. And it's just what people see. And it's, I don't want to say it's the truth of this country, but it is. It's the truth of this country. And that's how it's.
Yeah, why don't you want to say that? Yeah.
I mean,
this is the most colorphobic country there is in the world. You know, we're colorphobic, you know. Man, go ahead, though, man.
No, so, you know, that was it, you know, and the conversation was kind of abrasive at first, and I understood, you know, it's difficult to have these kind of conversations with people. These are the hard talks that we need to talk
Absolutely.
About, that you're just saying, you know, it's hard. And it's not a plea. It's not like we just trying to get a cop out or whatever you want to call it. It's not like we just
not seeking
crying,
pity and not feeling
pity
sorry
and
for
all
ourselves.
That stuff,
it's
man. It's just, yeah, it's the same shit that we've been riding through for 400 years.
it's a matter of visibility, you know. And people need to understand that that's a real issue for Black Americans, becoming visible. You know, in a country that is much more comfortable with our invisibility.
Give me the quote, the Invisible
right
Man, before we go. Give me the quote, the Invisible
it
Man.
It is sometimes advantageous to be invisible, although it can be rather wearing on the nerves.
There it is. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. Where we provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experience, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. So I'm Will. That's Bill over there. Hey, Bill,
Yo.
Speaking of which, man, you mentioned, you said what? You're going to be gone. Did you want to speak about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I'll be gone next week. No, we out of time. I'll be gone next week. You know, so... So you're going to have to, you don't have to. So, you know, but I've learned from you. So I already know that, you know how to fly solo. So I'll be in the mountains I'll be at the foothill of the mountains in Colorado for a spiritual retreat.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this the closing out song is definitely for you and for your journey
Amen.
Up there in Colorado, man. I know me and everybody else in the millions of listeners out there hope that you have a safe journey there and back.
Amen.
As always, man, ladies and gentlemen, be safe, be blessed, and most importantly, be yourself. Have a safe trip, Dad. Love you.
All righty, Will. Love you back, man.
All right. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Amen.